your opponent is choleric temper, seek to irritate him. Pretend to be weak, that he may grow arrogant. Sun Tzu.
As the world watches and listens in horror, the peaceful pro-democracy demonstration in China comes to
a violent end. Have you ever wondered?
Mr. Gorbachev, tear down this wall.
Who's pulling the strings?
Wolves hiding nearby, whispering, do or die. Around me,
you'll find us in the shadows and at the tip of the spear.
You say your last.
A threat rises in the east. Russia invades Ukraine. Warfare is evolving. And all the world is a stage.
There is another very important phase of warfare. It has as its target not the body, but the mind of the enemy.
The target of psychological warfare is against the enemy's mind.
It is words and ideas.
Ammunition used by Cywar.
Anything we touch is a weapon.
Its mission is to influence the thoughts of the enemy soldier. And at the
we
same time,
deceive,
is expected and encouraged to study foreign languages,
persuade,
and the social sciences such as history, economics,
change,
and sociology. He must have a broad and sympathetic understanding,
influence,
of all phases of human experience.
Gripping,
inspire,
at my skin, the walls of night close in.
Come in many forms.
The use of this force as an integral part of combat has now taken on new form.
We are everywhere.
To say my last goodbye.
Feeling in the dark. A message in the stars. Ghosts in the machine. Cywar, psychological warfare. Verbum vincit, eh? The word will conquer. Words, words, words. Good morning. Good morning and welcome to Road Warrior Radio. You're tuned in live this Thursday, March 16, 2023 on the one and only Republic Broadcasting Network. And as always, thanks for coming along for the ride. And it is a wild and dystopic ride. I am your host, Chris Hinckley, and we are all road warriors, those who would esteem ourselves to be. And I need to get to those three things. I will do that today, but the three reasons, the three main reasons Hayek cites in The Road to Serfdom, Chapter 10, Why the Worst Get on Top. And we will get there today. Some groundwork needs to be laid, I think, and that's why we've gone the way that we've gone. So here we are this morning, and you know, in the words, I mentioned the Dresden James quote yesterday, Donald James Wheel. Wrote some interesting stuff, involved in some interesting projects. As he put it, when a well-packaged web of lies has been sold gradually to the masses over generations, the truth will seem utterly preposterous and its speaker a raving lunatic. So that's kind of what we're shooting for this morning. That's what we're shooting for. With the insanity that we see around us, there are some cues, there are some clues. You know, we can go back in history and see, if we remember, Zbigniew Brzezinski wrote in Between Two Ages, America's Role in the Technotronic Era, a time would come when people would not believe a thing unless they heard about it on the 6 o'clock news. If it was not broadcast on the six o'clock news, well, then it must not have happened. And we've seen some very eerie coincidences. More recently, I've talked about Vivek Ramaswamy and his 2024 presidential bid. One thing that does concern me, you know, it seems if I'm cautiously optimistic and hopeful, I think he's sort of delousing and decompressing from the programming that he has endured throughout his Ivy League academic career, for example, and beyond. But, you know, he, in the interview with Hugh Hewitt, for example, he mentioned that he thinks it's time for a little creative destruction. And that is not a good thing. So Joseph Schumpeter and, you know, this idea of creative destruction, you know, think of disaster capitalism, you know, opportunities of crisis. It's the symbol of the Ouroboros, you know, the snake eating its own tail. And so interesting what is happening, you know, the influence that words have upon us. James Corbett had that post a while back and talked about an article the most significant, important article, and that no one noticed. And the story of the century just broke and no one noticed, is the way that he put it. And this is a recurring theme that we are not noticing. Maybe there's a reason that Jaron Lanier wrote the book. Well, first he wrote You Are Not a Gadget, a Manifesto, and coined some interesting terminology in the process. But, you know, then he wrote the book 10 Arguments for Deleting Your Social Media Accounts Right Now. Talked a little bit about the invasive nature of that technology and how it's still very much military technology. We can go back in history, but I think what we will do is maybe play some stuff, play some clips. Aaron and Melissa Dykes have, they just published a new video yesterday titled Ohio, White Noise, and the Power of Words Over Things. We probably should play some clips from that before we do. We should play this other one as a precursor to that. This is one that they, I think, could have mentioned in this one as well. Again, the title is Ohio, White Noise, and the Power of Words Over Things. Remember, that's the pill in the movie and the book White Noise. Indistinguishable things, you know, in words. So there's this other video that we'll play first That time a military PSYOP unit worked at CNN. Which unit was it? Was it by chance the same unit that James Corbett is talking about in the Washington Post article that tells us out in plain sight? Is it the same thing that we've been seeing? What? Mine's... weird. I'm seeing it. That's weird. You can't see it? So that time a military PSYOP unit worked at CNN. Mr. Bordop can't see it. I can see it. Well, we won't play it if we can't see it. Naturally. This is what happens. All right. So, yeah, that time a military PSYOP unit worked at CNN. You know, maybe we can do, we'll do a couple of others real quick, maybe. How about this? Hiding in plain sight, these things. But do we notice? Nah. How about this one first? And then we got another one. Army embeds PSYOP soldiers at local TV stations. What? No. Inconceivable. Can we, by chance, play that? And then one more like it. Army PSYOPs on U.S. senators reported. Are we watching what's happening in plain sight? No, not really. So, can we play this next one? Army embeds PSYOPs soldiers at local TV stations. Can we play that one?
The U.S. Army has used local television stations in the U.S. as training posts for some of its psychological operations personnel, according to Yahoo News blog The Upshot. Since at least 2001, both WRAL, a CBS affiliate in Raleigh, North Carolina, and WTOC, a CBS affiliate in Savannah, Georgia, have regularly hosted active duty soldiers from the Army's 4th Psychological Operations Group as part of the Army's Training with Industry program. Training with Industry is designed to offer career soldiers a chance to pick up skills through internships and fellowships with private businesses. The PSYOP soldiers use WRAL and WTOC to learn broadcasting and communications expertise that they could apply in their mission, as the Army describes it, of, quote, influencing the emotions, motives, objective reasoning, and ultimately the behavior of foreign audiences. WRAL and WTOC were on a list of participants in the Army's Training with Industry program provided to The Upshot in response to a Freedom of Information Act request. And a spokeswoman with the Army's Human Resources Command confirmed that PSYOP soldiers worked at the stations. Lieutenant Colonel Stacy Bathrick said, quote, both of these stations are very supportive of the military and think very highly of the program. Bathrick said the soldiers were never involved in news gathering. The relationship between PSYOPs, training with industry, and television news operations has stirred controversy in the past. In 2000, after a Dutch newspaper reported that PSYOPs troops had been placed in CNN's newsroom under the program, CNN discontinued the internships and admitted that they had made a mistake. A spokesperson said at the time, quote, it was inappropriate for PSYOPs personnel to be at CNN. They are not here now, and they never again will be at CNN. WRAL and WTOC are not alone among media outlets that the U.S. military has sought to learn from through training with industry. The Upshot has previously reported that the Marine Corps placed public affairs officers with the Chicago Tribune for several years in order to better understand how to influence and work with the news media. And CNNMoney.com hosted an officer in 2007 and 2008, despite the network's embarrassment over the program in 2000.
So that's interesting. You know, we're talking about a very, very, very small group of people. There's one more that I want to play if we can. This one titled Army PSYOPs on U.S. Senators Reported. Can we do that one, please?
From the L.A. Times, General David Petraeus, the top U.S. commander in Afghanistan, called this past week for an investigation into allegations that an Army general ordered military personnel trained in psychological operations to manipulate visiting U.S. lawmakers into providing additional funding and support. Rolling Stone magazine reported online that Lieutenant General William B. Caldwell, the commander of the American mission to train Afghan security forces, put pressure on PSYOP soldiers in violation of federal law, quote, to target visiting senators and other VIPs, including Senators John McCain and Joe Lieberman, as well as Admiral Michael Mullen, chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff. Writer Michael Hastings, whose June 2010 profile of General Stanley McChrystal led to the general's removal as the senior military commander in Afghanistan, cites Lieutenant Colonel Michael Holmes, leader of an information operations unit at Camp Eggers in Kabul, Afghanistan, as saying that Caldwell's chief of staff asked him how the unit, quote, could secretly manipulate the U.S. lawmakers without their knowledge. The magazine quotes the Caldwell staff member as saying, quote, how do we get these guys to give us more people? What do I have to plant inside their heads? Hastings' article is titled Another Runaway General, an allusion to his piece on McChrystal, in which the general's staff frequently derided top civilian leaders, including then-Special Envoy Richard Holbrooke and U.S. Ambassador to Afghanistan Carl Eikenberry. That article prompted an inquiry that led President Obama to swiftly remove the Army general from his post. Colonel Dave LaPon, a Pentagon spokesman, said the investigation into Rolling Stone's latest findings would examine, quote, what actions took place and if any of them were inappropriate or illegal. LaPon said he did not know who would be appointed to lead the inquiry.
You know, these examples are 12 years old, obviously, but I guess we can say now you know why they killed Michael Hastings. This is, you know, basically blowing the PSYOPs wide open, the PSYOPs that are pointed at us, that around the same time we heard was legalized and normalized. The 2012 Smith-Mundt Modernization Act, Operation Earnest Voice, sock puppets, etc., etc. As a side note, yesterday Patrick Bet David posted this. Let's see, the numbers don't add up. It says the combined national debt of China, UK, Germany, India, Italy, France, and Japan is the same as US. It's the flag. Both are $31.5 trillion in debt. If we compare GDP of same countries versus United States, combined $35 trillion, USA equals $21 trillion. At this pace, U.S. is recklessly spending into bankruptcy. Okay, that's a point that Stalin made. But here's a question. Does anyone wonder if, you know, BRICS, for example, and America are all in debt. If China's in debt and we're in debt, anybody stop and ask who's holding that debt? In debt to whom or what? And so, you know, that reminds me of Quigley's Anglo-American establishment. We hear it's the Chinese, they're holding us off. Well, if they're in debt too, Quigley exposes the secret societies established in London in 1891 by Cecil Rhodes. Quigley explains how these men worked in union to begin their society to control the world. He explains how all the wars from that time were created to control the economies of all the nations. Everybody at war? Everybody in conflict? Yeah. Strange. All right, we'll try to play this last one. We're skipping the break. So, TruthStream Media. That time, a military PSYOP unit worked at CNN. That first video. Go ahead, please.
Some people still think when CNN says it's the most trusted name in news.
The most trusted name in news.
That's actually true, because they said so.
The most trusted name in news.
I came across this article when I was doing another report the other day about the CIA's infiltration of the mainstream media in general. And after going back and reading the entire article, I think we should all read it. I think everyone should have a look at this article. So this comes from the Los Angeles Times, March 27, 2000. And as Alexander Cockburn explains in this article, he only heard of it after a Dutch journalist in Holland reported on it after hearing about it in an intelligence brief that was sent out in France. So that's how this worked. Nobody in the United States was reporting on this article. Today's news is brought to you by Big Brother. A handful of military personnel from the 4th Psychological Operations Group based at Fort Bragg, North Carolina, have until recently been working in CNN's headquarters in Atlanta. An enterprising Dutch journalist named Abe de Vries came up with this important story in mid-February, and he remains properly astounded that no mainstream news medium in the U.S. has evinced any interest in it. Astounded. Really? I came across translations of DeVries' stories after they'd appeared in late February in Trouw, probably saying that wrong, but the foremost newspaper in Holland. DeVries later told me he'd originally come upon the story in the French newsletter Intelligence Online, available on a pay-per-story basis, February 17th, which described a military symposium in Arlington, Virginia that discussed the use of press in military operations. A Colonel Christopher St. John, commander of the U.S. Army's 4th PSYOPs group, was quoted by intelligence's correspondent present at the symposium as, in the correspondent's words, having, quote, called for greater cooperation between the armed forces and media giants. He being St. John, pointed out that some Army PSYOPs personnel had worked for CNN for several weeks and helped in the production of some news stories for the network, end quote. Reading this in Belgrade, where he's Trouw's correspondent, DeVries saw a good story, picked up the phone, and finally reached Major Thomas Collins of the U.S. Army Information Service, who duly confirmed the presence of these Army PSYOPs experts at CNN. PSYOPs personnel, soldiers, and officers, DeVries quoted Collins as telling him, have been working in CNN's headquarters in Atlanta through our program, whatever program that is, training with industry. They worked as regular employees of CNN. They helped in the production of news. I reported this interesting disclosure in Counterpunch a couple weeks ago and made it the topic of my regular broadcast to AM Live, a program of the South Africa Broadcasting Company in Johannesburg. Among the audience of this broadcast was CNN's bureau in South Africa, which lost no time in relaying news of it to CNN headquarters in Atlanta. And I duly received an angry phone call from Eason Jordan, who identified himself as CNN's president of news gathering and international networks. Jordan was full of indignation that I had somehow compromised the reputation of CNN. But in the course of our conversation, it turned out that yes, CNN had hosted a total of 5 interns from U.S. Army PSYOPs, 2 in television, 2 in radio, and 1 in satellite operations. Jordan said the program began on June 7, just before the end of the war against Serbia, and only recently terminated at about the time CNN's higher management read Abe de Vries' stories. Naturally enough, Eason Jordan and other executives at CNN now describe the Army PSYOPs intern tours at CNN as having been insignificant. Maybe so. St. John, the commanding officer of PSYOPs group, certainly thought them of sufficient significance to mention them at the high-level Pentagon powwow in Arlington about propaganda and psychological warfare. Maybe CNN was the target of a PSYOPs penetration and is still too naive to figure out what was going on. Oh, really? Is that really what you think? It's hard not to laugh. Yeah, it's hard not to laugh at the last thing this guy just wrote. But anyways, it's hard not to laugh when CNN execs like Jordan start spouting, as he did to me, high-toned stuff about CNN's principles of objectivity and refusal to relay government propaganda. They just refuse. They refuse to. In the Kosovo conflict, as with other recent wars, CNN's screen was filled with an unending processing of bellicose advocates of bombing, many of them retired U.S. Army generals. Let's give the last word to the enterprising DeVries. Quote, "Of course CNN says these PSYOPs personnel didn't decide anything, write news reports, etc. What else can they say? Maybe it's true, maybe not. The point is that these kind of close ties with the Army are, in my view, completely unacceptable for any serious news organization. Maybe even more astonishing is the complete silence about the story from the big media." So for just one example of many, in July 1996, when we were all told a bomb went off at the Summer Olympics in Atlanta, directly across the street from CNN headquarters,
"We have had word now of an explosion at the Centennial Olympic Park, which, as you may know, is right outside of CNN Center.
We actually were making our way through the park from CNN Center to get to this location when the explosion occurred. It was a very concussive. You could feel the explosion. I didn't see much smoke. Again, there was the explosion. We didn't see much smoke, and there was no visible smoke after the explosion, so we're not sure of the nature of it, but it was quite loud, and then a very very loud, very concussive explosion occurred, Andrea."
"Can you explain this explosion, Mark, how it sounded, how it felt? I know some people here at CNN Center felt it as well."
It was very concussive. It was...
Okay, Mark, thank you. Mark McKay reporting to us from Centennial Olympic Park, which, as you know, is adjacent, actually, across the street from CNN Center.
Just oh so coincidentally, 10 days after the completely suspicious downing of TWA Flight 800, which their own Anderson Cooper, who, by the way, spent two summers, not one, but two, interning at the CIA before he decided, oh, I'm going to become a reporter instead, and said that TWA Flight 800 was actually shot down.
"Back in July 17th, 1996. When TWA Flight 800 was shot down off the coast of Long Island off New York, killing all on board."
Only to come back from commercial break and say, oh, the government said it was a fuel tank explosion.
"Before I do, I just want to correct something I said regarding the plane crash. Earlier I said that today was the anniversary of Flight TWA 800 crashing off the coast of Long Island in 1996. I believe I said it was shot down. Obviously, the government said it was a center fuel tank explosion, though some people had indicated they saw a rocket. There's no evidence of that."
When that same CNN was one of the first media outlets to jump on board with the erroneous claims that the Olympics bombing, which, again, was perfectly timed to deflect all public attention and scrutiny away from TWA Flight 800, blowing up mid-flight and killing all 212 passengers and 18 crew on board, to the point that even on the monument to those people's deaths, they say that the cause of the explosion is disputed. When they declared that the bombing was perpetrated by AT&T security guard Richard Jewell, who underwent a baseless trial by media for which CNN was later forced to pay Jewell an undisclosed monetary sum in court after he sued them for libel and slander, well, is it any coincidence that just a few years later, while covering war in Serbia, it was also discovered that Army psychological operations personnel, officers, and soldiers were actually working directly at CNN headquarters to help produce the derisive air quotes news? Short answer? No. CNN. The most trusted name in bullshit.
Well, I guess we maybe should have filtered that last bit out, but what do you do? We are the rats in the lab experiment of psychological operations. So, welcome to ground zero in the Psy War. And it's been going on for a long time. We've heard rumors. Remember, William Colby said, oh yeah, you know, in his congressional testimony, maybe we should play that. We should probably play that when we come back from this next break. But, you know, do you have credentialed journalists on staff? Absolutely. And then George Bush took over and said, you know, George Herbert Walker Bush, Daddy Bush, said that'll never happen again. We won't do that. Instead of credentialed journalists, they retreated into the woodwork. Now it's sources tell us, anonymous sources say, you know, on, of course, they don't want to be named, because they come from, you know, this particular contingent. Then George Bush said, I'm going to be so much better a president for having been at the CIA that you're not going to believe it. He actually said that. Stick around. We'll be right back.
handle the truth.
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network. Real news, real talk, real people. Because you can handle the truth. Are you sick of censorship? TLB Talk is the cure. TLB stands for Truth, Liberty, and Balance. We are the newest and most unique social media platform to hit the internet. We were built out of necessity because Big Tech, Big Pharma, and Big Brother are out of control. The only thing bigger than them is when we, the people, are united. With that vision, TLB Talk was born. Our battlefield is in cyberspace. The battle we're in can be won by clicks of buttons and voting with your wallet. TLB Talk has no hidden agendas, no corporate funding, and we do not sell, trade, or give away any of your information. Our platform runs off of generous donations of members and merchandise profits. So please, check out our site. It's the best around. And be sure to stop by our store. It's loaded with items that'll have you feeling a sense of member pride and victory. Come unite with us today at tlbtalk.com and join the social media revolution.
Extendivite, a 7-herb combination of garlic, cayenne, hawthorn, bilberry, ginkgo biloba, valerian, and milk thistle. Extendivite is designed to strengthen the heart and arteries and help the body heal itself. Doctors are not able to explain the improvements they are seeing in their patients' health who are taking Extendivite. People who once needed more pills are now taking less and getting better. Due to the unexplainable improvements in their patients' health, more doctors are calling to order Extendivite for themselves. Help Extendivite make your doctor a believer. Extendivite is available in capsule or liquid form for just $69.95 for a 2-month supply. To get started, call 1-877-928-8822, that's 1-877-928-8822, or visit heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
In times like these, you can't depend on the government to keep you warm and fed, but you can depend on the Vermont Bun Baker to do just that. With a Vermont Bun Baker, you'll never be in a situation where you can't cook, bake, fry, boil water, or heat your home all at the same time. One of the most revolutionary cook stoves, wood stoves ever, the Vermont Bun Baker is available with or without soapstone veneer, a natural stone that retains heat and radiates it back into the room once the fire is out. A beautiful addition to your home, the Vermont Bun Baker has an efficiency rating well above 75% and qualifies for the wood stove tax credit. For more information, watch the Vermont Bun Baker on YouTube and live stream or visit us at www.vermontwoodstove.com. You can also reach us by calling 1-866-SOAPSTONE. Don't ever be hungry or cold because the power's gone out. With a Vermont Bun Baker, all you have to worry about is what's for dinner.
I thought that it was a matter of real concern that planted stories intended to serve a national purpose abroad came home and were circulated here and believed here, because this would mean that the CIA could manipulate the news in the United States by channeling it through some foreign country. Now, we're looking at that very carefully.
Do you have any people being paid by the CIA who are contributing to a major circulation American journal?
We do have people who submit pieces to other two American journals.
Do you have any people paid by the CIA who are working for television networks?
This, I think, gets into the kind of getting into the details, Mr. Chairman, that I'd like to get into in executive session.
At CBS, we had been contacted by the CIA. As a matter of fact, by the time I became the head of the whole news and public affairs operation in 1954, ships had been established, and I was told about them and asked if I'd carry on with them.
We have quite a lot of detailed information, and we will evaluate it, and we will include any evidence of wrongdoing or any evidence of impropriety in our final report and make recommendations.
Do you have any people being paid by the CIA who are contributing to the National News Services, AP and UPI?
Well, again, I think we're getting into the kind of detail, Mr. Chairman, that I'd prefer to handle in executive session.
Senator, do you think that you named the news organizations in your final report?
That remains to be decided.
I think it was entirely in order for our correspondents at that time to make use of CIA agent chiefs of station and other members of the executive staff of CIA as sources of information which were useful in their assessments of world conditions.
Would you say that continues today?
Well, I would think probably for a reporter it would continue today, but because of all of the revelations of the period of the 1970s, it seems to me that a reporter's got to be much more circumspect in doing it now, or he runs the risk of at least being looked at with considerable disfavor by the public. I think you've got to be much more careful about it.
Well, I'm glad that doesn't happen anymore, aren't you? I'm so relieved that this doesn't happen anymore. We have a situation now, as Aaron and Melissa Dykes pointed out in their latest video, as I mentioned earlier, Ohio White Noise and the Power of Words Over Things. We will play a couple of clips from that in a moment, I think. We will begin to anyway. But we're in a situation where it's spellcasting. I mean, that's really what it is. It's just hypnotic spellcasting. It's, again, where creative destruction and disaster capitalism meet scenario planning. This is a whole new level of, the dialectical conflict model that we hear. I think it's a misnomer. First of all, you can go to the Wikipedia entry for FIDA, Johann Gottlieb FIDA. And I think, let's see if it still says, FIDA was also the originator of thesis, antithesis, synthesis, an idea that is often erroneously attributed to Hegel. There you go. Like Descartes and Kant before him, FIDA was motivated by the problem of subjectivity and consciousness. FIDA also wrote works of political philosophy. He has a reputation as one of the fathers of German nationalism. And this also is the guy who, Bertrand Russell noted in The Impact of Science on Society, this is the guy who, as Russell put it, FIDA laid it down that education should aim at destroying free will, so that after pupils have left school, they shall be incapable throughout the rest of their lives of thinking or acting otherwise than as their schoolmasters would have wished. So this whole scenario planning meets creative destruction and disaster capitalism as a means of government. What do I mean? Well, that's something that Aaron and Melissa Dykes get into in this video, Ohio White Noise and the Power of Words Over Things. We should just get into it because we're going to run short on time if we don't. But, wave upon wave, cycle upon cycle. This is how we are governed, apparently. Let's just get started on this, shall we? Where do we tie this off? There we go. So I'm gonna sort of withhold commentary for the moment so we can hammer through some of these clips. The history of this kind of practice goes back some time, and it has been normalized now. It's difficult to ignore. Possible, I would say. However, unless, you know, like Brzezinski wrote, again, you have been conditioned not to believe a thing unless it appears on the 6 o'clock news. And in that case, you know, I mean, we've talked about this. Alan Watt used to talk about it. Other folks have talked about it. I've talked about it for years, nearly, I would say, since the beginning of this broadcast. I told an anecdote, personal experience in the Los Angeles area. You know, riots in the Venice Beach area. And, it's on the news there. It must be happening. But, you know, it's happening in people's front yard and they didn't believe it. And now, obviously, we've gone much further. I said I would withhold commentary. Let's play the first clip from this video, Ohio White Noise and the Power of Words Over Things. Go ahead, please.
If you even mention the phrase predictive programming, there's already a built-in deflection in academia and other facets of the system to say that this idea is all a conspiracy theory, that it's all based on your confirmation bias that's causing you to put patterns together out of what are likely just coincidences. But there sure are an awful lot of coincidences out there these days, aren't there? So, in order not to sound like a crazy conspiracy theorist, I won't define it for you. I'll let this page on University of Ohio's website do it instead. Predictive programming at its core is a tactic to reduce resistance by introducing concepts that seem far-fetched and continuously reintroducing them to make these concepts appear more likely, or at the very least, acceptable. It's also used as a sort of self-fulfilling prophecy because once an expectation is created, then when these events start to happen, the population may seem more likely to accept the fate. There's also control of imagination because the most commonly used tool in predictive programming is science fiction. By creating these stories, the author can create boundaries of imagination and slowly show what may happen. At the very least, it's putting an image out there that gives a preset idea of what that will be, so that if it's encountered later, there's already a preset, predetermined image that's been stored. I'm sure many of you by now are aware of the situation unfolding in East Palestine, Ohio, after it was somehow decided following the derailment of a Norfolk Southern train carrying toxic chemicals on the evening of February 3rd, that it would be best to just burn all the chemicals.
It smells like a chlorine, and leaves like a bad taste in your throat.
And this was the water they pulled from around their property after the chemical release,
creating a giant black plume in what officials and reporters are referring to as a controlled release and burn. As if just by calling it that, we're to believe anyone was actually in control over what happens to this random mix of toxic chemicals once it's lit on fire and sent out into the air in its new gaseous form. Where that goes, how much of it will come back down, leach through the soil into the groundwater, and what short and long-term accumulative effects that will have on the health and lives of the people, the food chain, the water supply, things like that.
Well, there's the lie. It wasn't a controlled burn, it was an uncontrolled burn. See, I'm a chemical engineer as well as a top health and safety guy. I've got undergraduate and graduate degrees in chemical engineering.
In your opinion, why do you believe that it was an uncontrolled burn? Why are you using that terminology when so far everywhere else we've seen that it was a controlled burn?
You can go to a place called West Liverpool downriver, and that's where they burn hazardous waste. And in a hazardous waste situation, they very carefully control the temperature and the amount of oxygen so that they get complete combustion, right? It's time, temperature, and amount of the air-fuel ratio. There's no controlling of the amount of air that gets in there. That's why you saw all that soot. So it's not a controlled burn, because a controlled burn would have to be like in a furnace or in your car or some system where you control the fuel, in other words, the vinyl chloride and the amount of oxygen. So they didn't do that. So it's an uncontrolled burn.
I've looked through the media from all sides of the political spectrum here to see what is fully being said, because it's usually not the same, despite the fact that a train derailment really shouldn't be a partisan issue. In any given event that rises to the status of national attention, one might think it should be easy to find a base level of agreed upon details, right? But I think we all know that these days, everything can be made into a partisan issue with a little effort, enthusiasm, and spin.
He placed someone with deep ties to the chemical industry in charge of the EPA's chemical safety office. That's who you voted for in that district. Donald Trump.
That's how our post-truth, post-postmodern media is. The same exact event gets reported on differently depending on which channel you watch, typically slanted and angled along where the political spectrum bias lies. So I'm going to go back and forth between Fox, CNN, NPR, CBS, NBC, etc., to try and get a fuller picture of what people are being told is happening here. But first, I want to start with the basic details of what we're being told took place from the National Transportation Safety Board. This derailment in Ohio involved a 150-car train, which included 20 cars carrying toxic substances. Of the 38 that derailed, ultimately 11 were carrying these substances, and they included things like vinyl chloride, ethylene glycol monobutyl ether, ethyl hexyl acrylate, isobutylene, and benzene. Each one of these has its own lovely array of side effects and health issues it can cause in various forms, and since they all got mixed around and burned together, attributing symptoms like migraines or nausea or difficulty breathing or skin rashes to one specific chemical over another would be kind of tough to do. Early reports discuss the fact that when burned, vinyl chloride produces other potentially harmful gases, including carbon monoxide, hydrogen chloride, and phosgene, which was used in much higher concentrations in the chemical warfare of World War I. It was reported that officials decided to dig a hole, drain the leftover chemicals into it, and burn them, supposedly to avoid a potential explosion. They only evacuated half of the 5,000 people in the village of East Palestine in a one-mile radius. And residents were told they could come back just a couple days later on February 8th. So this all happened within 5 days. The train derailed. A couple days later, they burned all these chemicals. And a couple days after that, they told everyone it was fine to come back. So dumping the chemicals into a pit together like a big toxic soup and then burning them all into the environment, that was the big plan.
One of the worst ways to determine exposure in general is to smell it, because if you smell the odor, guess what? You're already exposed.
Right? And others, including hazardous materials expert Sil Caggiano, who's been interviewed by several news outlets, as is the custom after an event like this, of getting a local person with a good resume that shows he or she is qualified to do media rounds on it, says this was a bad idea that doesn't make any sense to him at all.
When they told me their plan, you know, at that point you had a few cars burning. They had unmonitored hand lines there keeping the tankers cool. And then I find out that they're pulling the unmonitored hand lines keeping the tankers cool. I said, well, that's just going to cause the tanker cars to heat up, which they did. And then they announced that one was very near catastrophic failure. And I said, well, if they don't put water back on it, it's going to continue to heat up, and it's going to, what's called a blevy, and it's going to damage other containers. And then I was told, no, they're going to detonate all these cars so that it doesn't happen. I could tell you, Mr. Carlson, I've been looking at rail incidents over and over, because in Youngstown, Ohio, there's three rail lines that run through our town. So as a chief and as a instructor, I trained my guys to anticipate stuff. And I would go case study after case study after case study, coming up with different scenarios just to keep it going. And I've never once in 39 years ever heard of them blowing up train cars, right, Dumping all the chemicals into a trench and lighting them on fire. I was dumbfounded.
What Norfolk Southern and the city officials and state officials of Ohio did is literally the equivalent of someone thinking one pump at a gas station might sort of kind of maybe possibly be on the verge of maybe exploding. And so what they decide to do is just go ahead and empty out all the gas onto the ground and light it on fire. Explain to me how that makes any kind of sense. Explain to me why, instead of making sure that one did not explode, that putting everything out instead and setting it on fire was the correct course of action, because it doesn't make any sense to me.
So are you getting the impression generally that things were supposed, and again, if you watch the movie or read the book, you know, you get the impression that maybe things were intended to explode? But then since they didn't, you know, maybe we should just tell them that we're gonna blow it up. And the young lady at the end there, she illustrates the insanity of this point, the absurdity of it very well. And, you know, apparently people stood around. Well, did they're experts. Do they have white coats on? Because if they have white coats on, then they must be experts. And so we should follow their, we should just do what they say. Wasn't that the Milgram experiment? In defense of the Nuremberg defense, people just follow orders, regardless of whether it makes sense or not. I think we're headed into a break. Are we headed into a break? Yeah. Stick around. We'll be right back after this short break.
Corporate media dominates the American opinion. Finding independent voices that counter this avalanche is becoming increasingly difficult. With the endless corruption running rampant throughout our government, independent voices are needed more than ever to battle the offensive against our freedoms and liberties. As a listener of RBN, no one understands this concept better than you. Now it's up to you to do your part. The time has come for you to take action and begin broadcasting the truth to hundreds or thousands of people every month. Sound impossible? Quite the contrary. With pointed slogans from LibertyStickers.com, you can reach countless sleeping Americans unaware that they live in a real-life wonderland. LibertyStickers.com has a huge inventory of political bumper stickers and messages that reflect the truth about our government, our politicians, and the future of America. With so many in stock, there's one perfect for you. Visit us today at LibertyStickers.com. Again, that's LibertyStickers.com. Do your part. Your voice is important. Let it be heard.
My name is John. I'm the founder of Blackout Coffee, and I started Blackout because I really love coffee. I've always loved coffee, and after traveling so much to Europe, South America, and trying so many different coffees that were so good, and every time I came back to the U.S., I was so disappointed with the coffee, so I figured that I had to do something about it. The biggest difference is on the beans and the roasting process, how we roast it, and how fresh it is. The fresher the roast, the better the quality. Here I have like all of the coffee. It's roasted within 1 to 2 days prior to being shipped. So it literally gets to consumers' house within 3 to 5 days after being roasted. If you like coffee, you have to try ours. It's fresh roasted. It's one of the best beans that we can get, and you will definitely see the difference.
Visit blackoutcoffee.com and use the coupon code REPUB10. That's REPUB10.
Hello, I'm Dr. Leonard Horowitz. I was right 30 years ago in warning the world about threatening lab virus outbreaks, AIDS, and Ebola. I was right 20 years ago when FBI Director Robert Mueller made me a suspect in the anthrax mailings because I warned the Bureau before the CIA's biocrime and Cipro sales psyops happened. I was right about COVID-19 being an AIDS-laced mutagen planned to resurge this fall to excuse officials' profitable depopulation globalization agendas. And I was right about the only safeguards being antioxidants and holy spiritual sustenance. Vitamin C, D, zinc, chlorophyll, oxygen, and oxysilver especially transmits the frequency resonance to neutralize the expanded function bioweapon. Oxysilver is a double superconductor of the healing power of love. It is the first nutraceutical invented to amplify prayer power and the faithful, loving intention of your heart. Buy, try, and stockpile oxysilver through health.
Reluctantly crouched at the starting line, engines pumping and thumping in time. The green light flashes, the flags go up. Churning and burning, they yearn for the cup. They deftly maneuver and muscle for rank. Fuel burning fast on an empty tank. Reckless and wild, they pour through the turns. Their prowess is potent and secretly stern. As they speed through the finish, the flags go down. The fans get up and they get out of town. The arena is empty, except for one man still driving and striving as fast as he can. The sun has gone down and the moon has come up. And long ago somebody left with the cup. But he's driving and striving and hugging the turns and thinking of someone for whom he still burns. He's going the distance.
Welcome back. A little, additional information. So in the video, Melissa Dykes mentions Daria Beaver's post over at Ohio State University. Under the section, The Psychology of Extraordinary Beliefs, Ordinary Students Explore Extraordinary Beliefs, the title of this post is Predictive Programming, and the post begins, Predictive Programming is theory, that's how it's written, is theory that the government or other higher-ups are using fictional movies or books as a mass mind control tool to make the population more accepting of planned future events. Alan Watt gets a nod here. This was first described and proposed by researcher Alan Watt, who defines predictive programming as, quote, predictive programming is a subtle form of psychological conditioning provided by the media to acquaint the public with planned societal changes to be implemented by our leaders. If and when these changes are put through, the public will already be familiarized with them and will accept them as natural progressions, thus lessening possible public resistance and commotion, end quote. And then there's a nod to Alex Jones, David Icke, and the Simpsons episodes, obviously, The Dark Knight Rises, Hunger Games, and other instances where this seems to have happened. So that's mentioned, and you can explore that at your leisure. But also something that you'll hear about in one of the clips that we play, because we'll play a couple more probably, is Tom Fazi's article. You know how I've talked about Lieutenant Eric Schein used to talk about Philip Bobbitt's Shield of Achilles and the market state. Then there was Patrick Porter's Rise of the Market Security State. I've talked about that before many times, soldiers fighting alone. And the market security state. More recently, we've had Aaron Cariardi's Rise of the Biomedical Security State, and he actually wrote the book on it. He had a Real Clear Politics post back in October of 2022 about it. And then his book, The New Abnormal, The Rise of the Biomedical Security State. And then more recently, which is cited in the video, we'll play clips, March 1, 2023, just a couple of weeks ago, Thomas Fazi's The Rise of the Biosecurity Complex. And crisis as a form of government. Crisis as a mode of government. So, we'll talk more about all of this. Second hour coming up. Stick around. We'll be right back after this short break.
Tune in Saturday mornings, 8 to 10 Central, to the Alternative Media with your host, Farron. If you've not been listening, this is some of what you've been missing.
2,000 mules, like you like to say occasionally, Farron, in your face.
They might have a set of lactating mammaries available that could provide milk for their adopted children.
Listen, news media, all pulling off this gigantic fraud.
Rhino, neocon, cucks.
There's this wonderful thing called Vote With Your Feet. Move to California.
I am a conspiracy factualist, and everyone else is a reality theorist.
Hundreds, if not thousands, of ships came out of nowhere.
Give me liberty, or let's give you death.
Any excuse to go in and kill yourself for this fraud of a government. This goes back 100 years.
When they come for your gold, give them a lead. And when they come for your guns, give them the bullets first. And God help us all.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.